And one of the ways is to look at the way that Buddha taught generosity. So, you know, I think the first thing is that we've all been the beneficiary, I imagine, of a gift in our life. We can think of gifts that we've been. And how did that make us feel when we got that gift? maybe, you know, we're always happy if someone gives us a birthday present, or I don't know if there's anyone old enough in this group to be a father, but I can tell you that on Father's Day, it's not always a good thing to actually get a gift. If your kids give you a tie or a socks that you already have plenty of. So a gift is not necessarily, a material gift is not necessarily something that is going to make you happy. But, you know, if somebody has really thought about the gift and understands you and thinks about it, and even if it's something that, you know, you don't think really hits the mark, at least that idea that people have put some effort and, you know, as often they say, it's the thought that counts into it, then you can, you know, appreciate the material gift even if it's you know, you've already got more pairs of socks than you need. So generosity is the first of the six parameters. Sometimes these are called the six perfections. My teacher Thich Nhat Hanh would refer to them as the six crossings to the other shore. You may know it as Dana Paramita. So the Buddha reminds us that we should understand dana, generosity, not simply in terms of material giving, but also in light of the gift of the Dharma or the teachings, and in addition to that, in light of the ultimate offering of a bodhisattva, which is the gift of non-fear. So already the Buddha makes us think about generosity in a different way than we might normally think about it in terms of, you know, either giving money or giving material things. So, I mean, how do we do that? How do we give the gift of non-fear? I'll just let that settle for a moment. To me, it comes from our practice. And if we learn from the teachings and we put those teachings into practice, then that's sometimes called the living Dharma. So it may well be good that we study the sutras, that we hear lots of Dharma talks from all the best teachers from all around the world, but do we put them into practice for ourselves? Do we actually practice those teachings, and do they make a difference? You know, do they make a difference to our life? Do they make us better? Is our well-being better because of that? Are we happier? Are our friendships better? Are our family and friends around us, do they feel the benefit of our practice? So I guess these are all questions that we can continually ask ourselves. It's something that, you know, we just don't think about once, but we can continually reflect on, for instance, in our meditation. So we might have a sound of the bell just to just have a little moment to let that sink in. So when we listen to the sound of the bell in our tradition, it's a chance for us to come back to the present moment. Even listening to my talk, your thoughts are probably going in all sorts of different directions. It starts thinking, the this is a moment to let go of our thinking, bring our attention from our head down into our body, and just perhaps notice our breathing and give our mind a rest. So I'm going to attempt to share a screen now, which is my teacher's contemporary writing of the second of the five precepts. And is that working? Yeah, okay. So it's the second precept, which traditionally might be called not stealing, not taking what is not given, for instance, in very when it's condensed. The other side of that is that it's generosity. So the positive side of that is not taking things, but is the act of giving in so many ways. And the interesting thing here is that Thich Nhat Hanh has built this precept, where he, as he calls the mindfulness training, as true happiness. So it makes the real connection there for us, which, you know, may not be immediately obvious, but it starts with being aware of suffering, just as the first noble truth, aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing and oppression. I'm committed to practicing generosity in my thinking, speaking, and acting. So already that's quite a broad way of us to think about generosity, to be generous in our thinking, speaking, and acting. And if we go down further there, this for those who haven't, maybe I'll just quickly go through the whole time, the whole precept here. Determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. And I'll share my time, my energy and material resources with those who are in need. I'll practice looking deeply to see that the happiness and suffering of others are not separate from my own happiness and suffering, and that true happiness is not possible without understanding and compassion. So as we read in the guided contemplation, that running after wealth, fame, power and sensual pleasures can bring much suffering. If we look into that, we might get short-term benefit from these things, but we need to look about the longer term, that they can actually bring suffering and despair. And the next part, which I think is very interesting in this precept, I'm aware that happiness depends on my mental attitude and not on external conditions, and that I can live happily in the present moment simply by remembering that I already have more than enough conditions to be happy. The connection here is also with right livelihood, which can reduce the suffering of living beings on earth, and ways that we can stop contributing to climate change, which you know, goes back to looking into, you know, where people are exploited in different cultures, the things that we consume. So it's very broad here. Very broad. This term with my students, I've been doing a particular book that maybe some of you know. It's called The Giving Tree. I don't know if there's anybody who is aware of that book. I'm going to put the turn the share screen off now if I can. How do I do that, Olivia?
Oh, there's a stop share button in the...
Oh, there it is. Yeah. Okay. And this is a, you know, it might be seen as a children's story, but it's interesting about a young boy who's very young, and he goes to play around this tree. At this stage, he's only like 5 years old. And gradually, as time goes on, the boy really loves the tree. He loves to just go and sit under the tree. And the tree also loves the boy. And as he grows older, he starts to climb the tree and swing from its branches. And he eats the apples in the tree. He really enjoys himself. He comes out very often. He even carves a heart in the bark of the tree, like a love heart. And it says, boy loves tea for tree, obviously. And then as he grows up and he becomes an adolescent, he comes, you know, less and less. But every time he comes, the tree is so happy to see him. And the tree says, come, boy, come play, you know, come swing from my branches, enjoy. But, of course, as he becomes a teenager, his interests change. And he says, well, actually, you know, I need some money, tree. Can you give me money? And the tree says, oh, you know, I'm a tree. I don't have any money. Maybe I could give you my apples and you could sell them at the market and then you could get some money. So... sure enough, the boy climbs the tree and picks all the apples from the tree and takes them away. And, you know, another long time passes and the boy comes back. And now, you know, he's a young man and the tree is so happy to see him. Every time the tree is, he said, yes, come climb my tree and, you know, swing from my branches and let's have fun together like we always have. And the boy is now a man, says, look, you know, I want to have a family and build a house. You know, can you give me a house? And the tree says, oh, you know, I don't have a house. I'm a tree, but I guess you could cut my branches and use the wood from my branches to make your house. So sure enough, the boy... he's a young man now, cuts the branches and takes them away. And again, you know, it's an awful long time before the boy comes back and the tree sees him again. And the tree is so happy to see the boy. And he says, you know, you don't look happy, boy. Why is that? Because the boy is now a man, and he says, well, you know, I have a lot of problems and a lot of stress in my life now, and, you know, what I really want is to have a boat that I can sail away and sort of forget about, you know, the difficult life that I have. And the tree says, well, you know, I don't have a boat. I can't give you that. But I guess you could, you know, cut my trunk and, you know, maybe you could make a boat out of the trunk. And of course, the boy cuts the tree down and takes the wood and then goes away again. And then many years later, the boy comes back. And again, the tree is so happy to see him. And, you know, stay, boy, you know, still calls him boy, but now he's an old man. And the old man says, you know, I need, you know, not much these days. I really just want to sit down and have a rest. And the tree says, well, you know, I don't have anything left to give you. You've taken everything from me. But, you know, I am just a stump. You could use the stump to sit on me, just sit down. And so the old man sits down and has a rest and... then goes away. But still the tree is happy to give the man whatever he has. He doesn't regret giving things. He continues to give without any expectation of return, just because of his love of the boy. And, you know, in some ways, I always find that a very sad story. And sometimes I tell my students, you know, maybe we shouldn't just see it in terms of the tree. You know, it may be that, you know, we have a friendship in life. And, you know, maybe we take from that friendship without really appreciating it. Maybe even our parents, you know, our parents give us so much. You know, could that be a metaphor for us leaving home? Do we still to stay in touch with our parents? Or, you know, are we so self-absorbed, self-interested, like the man was, you know, not to be aware of how much he was taking from the tree without, I guess, appreciating it, how much. And the tree, you know, maybe like some parents are just happy to offer, you know, everything in their life, regardless of how their children might respond in that way. So I don't know how that fits with the whole story of generosity, but what I would like to also think about is in terms of gifts. You know, it can be very broad. It can be, you know, more than just the gift of material things. It can be the gift of the Dharma or the living Dharma and how we practice the living Dharma. And it can be the gift of non-fear. How do we express the gift of non-fear, or how might we start to do that? And I would like to just think that it can also be simpler things. So, you know, charity begins at home. Generosity or charity begins at home. So what gifts do we give ourselves? That's what I'd like to sort of pose as the question. There could be the gift of just to, you know, spark a few thoughts, the gift of resting. Do we give ourselves the gift of resting? What about the gift of our true presence, to be really present for not just ourselves and our difficulties? Do we take the time to take care of ourselves and be aware of how we're going? The presence of, you know, being there for a friend when we're listening to them. That can be a gift, and certainly a gift for ourselves. The gift of just being in the present moment. To, you know, do we give ourselves that gift during the day when we just can stop and, you know, how am I feeling now? How's my body? How, you know, do I have a lot of energy at the moment? Just coming back to ourselves, coming back to, you know, maybe one or two breaths during the day to stop. These are all gifts that we could think of. The gift of stopping, sometimes just to stop, stop our thinking, stop our self-criticism, maybe. The gift of letting go. What about, you know, can we let go of our ideas, our fixed thoughts? Sometimes we think we're right with our thinking. Sometimes we come across people who have different views to us. Can we understand their point of view, or do we create like a tension or a conflict? Do we feel that we have to, you know, be against that? Or even just the gift of having energy, the gift of accepting what is. What are the gifts that you give yourself? What are the gifts that have benefited you? I'd just like to throw that open. if anyone would like to share, I encourage you to do that. This is called sharing, by the way. So sharing your practice or something that's benefited you can really help other people. I think you would understand that in UniBuds. You know, sometimes I find that other people sharing is just, you know, their insights. They might be simple. And this is not like, you know, who can give the best example of a gift they give themselves. Just something simple and being able to share it is a very generous thing to do. So, you know, I encourage you, but if not, if people have questions about generosity, you know, I hope that, you know, you can share something or that this has opened up a way of thinking about generosity a little bit differently. So I'm going to bow out now and just leave a bit of silence in case anyone would like to bow in. And I think Olivia has probably allowed you to unmute yourself so that you could come in.
Yes, so if you'd like to share or if you have any questions, please feel free to unmute yourself. It's very interesting to think of generosity, not only to others, but also for ourselves. This is like a new perspective. Does anyone would like to share? Or any comments, any questions? No?
All right.
Hi.
Okay. Don't really know what's going on, but I'll share something. I feel like around our age, so I'm in university right now. In some ways, parents, a lot of my peers, I feel like family becomes secondary, so they go to uni in the morning, and maybe they just come home for dinner, and then afterwards they just like go in their rooms. Oh, I do that too, by the way. I do that too, 100%. But sometimes good to remember that you don't have, how do I put this? I take way too long to get to the point, but it's important to remember that what's important, you should really, you have a very limited time. And I guess the reason, so I don't go to UNSW, by the way, I go to Macquarie. So I chose this uni because it's 15 minutes away rather than 2 hours away. UNSW, everyone kind of wants to go to UNSW, but at the time I kind of made the choice because I was like, oh, if I go there, I won't be able to see him grow up. Yeah, that was way too long, but yes.
Oh, sorry, I was like gone for a bit. My internet has like some problem.
No, that's fine. I think
it was very interesting, like you mentioned at the beginning. I mean, I definitely relate because as like I'm an international student as well. Like, I don't live with my parents. So, and I feel like after I went to Australia, I haven't really talked much to my parents. I mean, yeah. in like a child who like shares everything with my parents. So like, I usually just talk about like, you know, the things that I really, really need to talk to my parents because I'm someone who prefers talking to my friends. And then I feel like after I come here, like I've been very, very like quite distance from my family. So that's a bit sad. Like, sometimes like when I'm busy, I just forget to just reach out and like talk to them, I guess. Yeah. Not appreciative enough, so.
Call them up after this.
Uh, Yeah. Anyone else like to share their experience?
Anyone else? Thank you, Emma. That's very nice sharing. And thank you, Olivia, too. I think, you know, both my parents have passed away. So, you know, one day that's going to happen to everyone's parents. And, you know, you don't want to have regrets about that. And just like friends, you know, I think we know what the interests of our friends, our parents, our family are. And, you know, it, we should be asking them about their interests and taking the time to be generous in that way. And, you know, they can feel like the tree. If you ring your parents back, Olivia, and, you know, ask them how they're going and tell them about what you're doing, you know, they're going to be like the tree and just be just so happy to hear from you and see you. So, you know, to be aware that that's how we make others feel with simple gifts. I think as well, you know, when we think of all of those things that I mentioned, and I'm sure you've all got examples of gifts that you give yourself if you think about it, we appreciate it more when we think of it as a gift, even though we're giving it to ourselves. And, you know, I mean, you might have picked up on the fact that this is a bit like loving kindness meditation. You know, we start with ourselves. We start by offering loving kindness to ourselves. And when we can give loving kindness to ourselves and compassion to ourselves, then we've got a template for being able to give it to others. And then we can go out to even our friends and then even to people who are neutral and eventually people who we, you know, maybe have made us suffer and offer them loving kindness. And it's the same with gifts. With generosity, when we can practice it towards ourselves, when we can appreciate the gifts that we can give ourselves, then, you know, we have that confidence and experience that we can, you know, do it with others. And, yeah, so I don't know if anyone else has anything that they'd like to share or even a question. Like, we still have a little bit of time there.
I think I have a question because, like you mentioned just now, I guess the way I understand it is like it's only possible for you to be like generous and like appreciative towards others if you do it to yourself first. Is that what you meant?
Yeah. Well, if we think of, let's say, giving ourselves a rest. Okay, you're all studying hard. You're pushing yourself really hard. You know, you can burn yourself out, obviously. And maybe we've all experienced when, you know, we've gone beyond what is enough and we've gone too far. So when we realise that, noticing that, recognising when we need to give ourselves a rest and actually giving ourselves a rest is actually a gift that we're giving ourselves, I think we appreciate that more. We appreciate that generosity towards ourselves more than if we haven't seen it as a gift. Oh yeah, that's something I have to do. I have to give myself a rest because I'm busy, you know. But no, to actually see it as generosity, we realize that it's something that is connecting us with happiness. And we need to develop these things as practices. This is not, you know, nothing that I give is, or that the Buddha taught was meant to be taken intellectually. It was something that we have to create and cultivate generosity more and a mind of generosity. So generosity in our thinking, you know, to be always, and we cultivate that. We develop it through habits and we get better at it as time goes on. So, you know, Buddhist teachings are really not very helpful if we only read them and take them intellectually. If we don't actually take them into our heart and into our practice and the way that we speak and do things, then, you know, we really get very little benefit from it. But if we practice it and it becomes our living Dharma, then, you know, our friendships and relationships become better. People around us are happier because we are happy. There's a connection there. And, you know, maybe you know all these things. But, you know, hopefully, you know, encouraging you to at least contemplate gifts that you give yourself. What are they? And I'm sure you've got them already. You know, we already have enough to be happy within us. We don't need more. They're there already. It's just that we need to, you know, nurture them, nourish them, and cultivate them. Yeah. I'm talking too much. Does anyone else want to talk?
Anyone else has any question?
You can ask me a question about anything if you like.
It doesn't have to be strictly about the topic, guys. Anything.
Yeah, well, I have four children, by the way. So one of them has just started uni. He's the third oldest. He's 19. He goes to UTS this year. He started. My youngest is 16. She'll be just starting her HSC year on Monday when she goes back to, back to school. And so year 12 starts then. And I have an older daughter who lives in Byron Bay. She's very lucky. She works there. She's 28. And I have a very older son who's 35, been working for a long time, so I have a big gap of kids, but sometimes you hear from them, sometimes you don't. When you do, you really appreciate it.
Emma, were you about to say something?
That's really cute. I have a question. It's kind of out of nowhere, so I'm not sure I'm religious. Is that okay?
You're not sure you're Buddhist, is it?
I'm not sure I'm religious. Sorry.
I didn't quite catch the last word. You're not sure.
I'm not sure I'm religiously Buddhist. So family is culturally Buddhist.
Yeah.
We say we're religious, but I'm not sure if I am, but I do believe in the teachings to some extent. Is that okay?
Well, of course it's okay. And, you know, I think I run a mindfulness evening at the Buddhist Library every Wednesday night, and it's open to the public. Most of the people who come along come from families from a Western culture, not from an Eastern culture. So they have come to Buddhism through books or hearing YouTube talks from teachers. Really they've come, and, you know, sometimes this is said, through their suffering. So they've suffered enough that they're looking for something to relieve that suffering. You know, they've had enough of doing that sort of thing. So what you're expressing is very common. A lot of the people who come along may not necessarily call themselves a Buddhist. I'm a lay Dharma teacher, ordained by my teacher, so it's pretty difficult for me to say, look, you know, I don't know if I'm a Buddhist or not, but, you know, sometimes I wish I hadn't told people I was Buddhist, because, you know, people can therefore have a certain attitude towards you. You know, even teaching special religious education in schools, some teachers don't believe that special religious education should be taught in schools, for instance. You know, there's examples of people who've, as teachers, have behaved badly. And in Victoria, actually, they've changed the legislation so that it's not taught during school time. But it is optional for students to come along. And you know, as I say, you can get a certain attitude towards you by saying that you're a Buddhist. So I don't think it really matters. What matters is how you practice, you know, your conduct in a way. And if you've learned something from the Buddha's teachings and you put it into practice yourself and it's given you a benefit, it's made you less stressful in your life, it's made you a better friend for people around you, your relationships better, you're kinder to people, not just people, but, you know, animals, plants and minerals, to all things, then, you know, that's important. The label is not important. And, you know, certainly many bad things have been done in respect of the term of religion. You know, people say a lot of wars have been created by religions. You know, politicians might take advantage of using their religion to get things. And I think that's a link there with generosity as well. You know, if we're giving something to someone, even if we're saying something kind and being generous, what's our motivation for doing that? We should ask ourselves that, you know, question very deeply. You know, some people will just give gifts because they want something back in return. But, you know, giving a gift should be like the tree, you know, it gives of itself without wanting anything back. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with being a Buddhist, but there's nothing wrong with not necessarily putting a badge on you, or, you know, wearing a T-shirt that says, look out, I'm a Buddhist. I think it's a good question. I think, you know, that could be something that could be, you know, a discussion with everybody. I mean, does anyone else have a view on that that would like to share about Emma's question?
I mean, for me, like, I was Buddhist by status, because, like, in Indonesia, back in India, we had to have a religion on our ID card. So I don't know why. That was a bit dumb, in my opinion. But yeah, so my family has been like a Buddhist, but we don't really practice that much until I came to Australia and I just like learned more about Buddhism. So I guess like now I can say that I'm a Buddhist, but I'm still like, sometimes I'm still not sure. So, yeah, that's that.
Anybody else feel like sharing? We've got a few minutes, you know. You don't want to have any regrets that you wish you had something that was on the tip of your tongue and you didn't ask the question or share it. Okay, you know, one of the things was I was still working in a corporate, quite a, you know, high corporate position when I first came to Buddhism. It was, you know, I came because of my suffering in a way. I'd been divorced. And but what I came to realise was that a lot of the Buddhist teachings was really helpful in my business life. And I had a lot of staff reporting to me. And I think that was, you know, really helpful in me being compassionate towards my staff. And in fact, you know, when people are in harmony and work well together in any organization, I think people know this, that goes well. If there's disharmony and people are fighting and backbiting and, you know, there's gossip and, you know, people don't like each other, things don't go well. It doesn't matter what type of organization it is. It doesn't matter how big the group is. That's pretty obvious. So the Buddhist practices can be very helpful in, you know, places. It doesn't have to be in the temple. You know, you don't have to say you're a Buddhist. But practicing that way and understanding the Buddhist teachings can be very, very helpful. It's hard for me to give an example now, but I really think that you know, my staff all enjoyed working in that environment. And sometimes what you do, and this is what I do with my students as well, the important thing is to create an environment where learning is possible. It's not a matter of lecturing or teaching, because I think the insights come from the group, and that is true of us as an individual as well. If we are comfortable in the environment and we feel calm and peaceful rather than stressed and worried about things, angry, whatever, then you know, we will be in a better position to learn and to understand, not just about ourselves, but also about others. So I think they're, you know, some of the really basic, I know they're very broad things that you can learn from the Buddhist teachings and being in this group. And, you know, it's, I think you're all, you know, that's a gift that you have, whether you realise or not, being in the Unibuds. You have a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, I look at people like Sien, who I have, is also a Buddhist scripture teacher, and that's, we have this great connection. And others like Tina, who runs the Meta Centre, you know, who came through Unibuds, and, you know, those people create a lot of happiness in society and the people around them through their really beautiful practice. You know, they really do live the Dharma. So, yeah, you all have that gift. It's been given to you, probably because of past karma from previous generations. Who knows? But, yeah, you know, you can smile and be happy that you've learned about this group. So many people will go through their whole life and never have had the chance to come in touch with these teachings. Yeah.
Anyone else has any last questions, comments, anything that you'd like to share?
Maybe can I ask some question?
Yes.
Yeah, Ken.
If sometimes if you have to choose between give it to yourself and other people, because sometimes you have to give something, but it will, if you have to give something to someone, but then you, it will make you suffering. But if you not give it, it will make another person suffering. In this case, how should I do? How should I think about this?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ken. you know, when we grow our heart, we have a greater capacity to give. So, you know, it's like practicing something. You know, when you start something, you know, your capacity is small. But when you practice it more and more, you develop that capacity. And we have to be aware of our capacity. So we get... you know, say a lot of people coming to retreats, and I say they suffer. They might be people who are carers for their parents, for instance, and they feel a great obligation to really do everything for their parents, and they do it without being aware of their own capacity. So what happens is they burn themselves out because they just are trying so hard to help someone else. And of course, if you're burned out, I mean, if you're stressed, if you're not well yourself, you're not going to be able to help somebody else. So we need to be able to understand our capacity and when we've had enough, and we need to give ourselves that gift of resting, of giving ourselves some space, of having time for ourselves. And, you know, it is a big conflict. I saw my father do it with my mum when she was sick and, you know, had terminal cancer. And he really wanted so much to help her. But eventually he burned himself out. And there was only so much he could do. But we have to realise what our capacity is to help. And then... you know, if you don't look after yourself, you can't really look after others. So again, this comes back to what gifts we can give ourselves and really being aware of our own capacity. You can develop your capacity over time. Some people have a greater capacity for generosity and giving than others, naturally. We have to cultivate that within ourselves. I hope that helps, Ken. I don't know. What do you think? Is it something more, or that's not answered your question?
Yes, thank you, because sometimes I kind of have a conflict in my sometimes. Yeah, actually with my parents, because sometimes they kind of ask me to help, but I don't know if I should I help or not, or something, because maybe it bring me some pain, some suffering. Yeah. So I understand that you have to kind of understand your capacity, that's how much you can give. Okay, thank you for your answer.
Yeah, I think, you know, talk to your parents and explain to them if you you can only help much. You know, they may have expectations, but, you know, this is communication. It's really important that we make others help them to understand our situation. They may want us to do things but not realise that we have other commitments. Communication is important. Loving speech in a way that's kind, not sort of saying, no, I can't do that, I'm too busy, I've got studies, or, you know. Do it in a way that helps them understand your situation, but also, you know, help where you can. Of course, you know, doubt and having a conflict, being on the horns of a dilemma, it's very normal. And you know, our practice is just to hold these things and to, you know, not to think that we're going to solve it straight away, but, you know, an answer will come if we can look deeply into it. And, you know, with compassion, there's always a way through any problem. So having compassion with your dilemmas or your conflicts can be helpful. Thank you, Ken.